Good afternoon. House Education Finance Committee will come to order. Let's see, Representative Poston, would you like to move the minutes from the last meeting?
Madam Chair, I've looked at the minutes. They look good, and I'd like to move them.
All right. Representative Poston moves adoption of the minutes for March 20th. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Minutes are approved. Thank you very much, Representative Poston. All right. We've got a full agenda today. This is another day the committee is devoting to the broad topic of school safety. We've got a great lineup of bills for consideration, and we have some special guests in the audience, so I'm sorry I'm going to embarrass you all and make you stand up, but the 10th, 11th, and 12th grade students from Gentry Academy are here today. Welcome to all of you. You're here for the Capitol Historic Site's Voice of the People, which is participating in learning about your role in Minnesota government, and you're doing a tour and some educational programming today. So we're really, really pleased that you're here. Thank you so much for coming. I'm happy to hear. All right, thank you for being here. All right, so we are going to start with Representative Jessup and Representative Christensen presenting together. And so we had a number of bills introduced with either a similar or identical bill by another member. And so in order to preserve committee time and try to get through as much of this as we can, because I know with deadline week, the evenings are already really packed, that's how we're going to choose to address it. So Representative Jessup has House File 3676 and Representative Christian 3885, both having to do with school security audits. And so, okay, so Representative Jessup, I'm going to formally move your bill, but we'll take testimony on both of your bills, and then after that, I'll just move Representative Christian's bill. And members, both of these bills, the motion will be to move them to public safety because they need to be heard there. So I will move that House File 3676 be referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Crime Prevention. And with that, welcome to both of you gentlemen, and would welcome comments from both of you. Just introduce yourselves for the record, and then we'll hear any of your testifiers.
Madam Chair, I am Representative Randy Jessup.
I'm Representative Drew Christensen.
Madam Chair, thank you for this opportunity. I think we all had very grievous reactions when we had the shooting that occurred on February 14th down in Florida. And what we have before us is an opportunity really to look at really the safety of our schools as they exist today in the state of Minnesota. And as we think about this, we know that this has been done in private industry, where if you go into certain large corporation buildings and so forth, you have a name tag, perhaps, if you are an employee. And that is a way that gets you access into the building. And we know that in the private world, the security is taken rather seriously. With our schools, we can also say that safety is a significant matter for everyone involved. Some schools and some school districts have really had this as a point of focus, and they have, we'll say, increased the amount of security that occurs within their schools. Schools also have what they call a crisis management policy. That could be for issues that might occur anywhere from a natural disaster such as a tornado to, you know, an unexpected guest that arrives at a particular school. So what you have before you is legislation. We want to do our best to make sure that our schools are safe within our state, and certainly all across the country as well. This is a proposal by which we would appropriate some money for audits to be done of schools and school districts, not only of the physical buildings for our schools, but also what's kind of the management plan in place if we need to deal with a crisis. Again, as I mentioned, some schools and some school districts have already taken actions, but this would be an opportunity for a school or a school district to go ahead and apply for a grant. So those schools that feel like they are behind on this whole area of concern, they would have the opportunity to apply, to have an outside group, an outside credential group come in and actually do an audit and take a look at what does the school district have in place today and where could they make improvements.
All right. Thank you, Representative Jessup. And Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My bill is similar to Representative Jessup's. It's a blank appropriation, just to take into account where the target is and that sort of thing, and supply flexibility that way. Representative Jessup did a great job of describing, kind of how these grants would work and what they could be used for. You know, I'd like to add that, the results of these audits will be recommendations to the school districts, some of which will, have significant expense, which I think we'll have more conversations about this legislative session. But there will also be suggestions that have little to no, that cost little to nothing, policy changes, things that will make our kids safer. So I think these audits are great things to spur this reimbursement, to spur school districts and schools to take these steps and kind of remove that financial burden from them.
All right. Thank you both. Members, do you have any testifiers? Or is anyone here who would like to testify on House File 3676 or on 3885, either Representative Jessup or Christensen's bill? All right. Not seeing any. Any questions from members of either bill author? And they're very similar. I think it's largely a matter of a designated amount for the appropriation, and the other leaves that amount blank. Representative Jurgens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question for either of you. Do you know how much a single audit would cost?
Representative Christensen.
Madam Chair, Representative Jurgens, they would cost between $5,000 and $20,000, depending on the size of the school. So anywhere from 100 to 400 schools could benefit, assuming the $2 million in Representative Jessup's bill.
Thank you.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For either of the bill authors, just wondering if you know how many school districts have completed this type of audit in the past, or if it's so new that it really hasn't been done yet?
Representative Jessup.
Madam Chair, Representative Bennett, I don't believe we do have a real understanding right now of what school districts as a overall group had done in the state of Minnesota. Certainly I'd welcome someone from the administration to advise us on that, but I think it has been done on a school district by school district basis. And that is where, as I thought about this, we really need a base standard to really understand, okay, where are we in terms of our school buildings and our school districts all across the state? And clearly we have a Department of Education that's very focused upon these are the standards, this is the education that we want to provide our students. But I don't think we have something similar in terms of looking at the safety of our schools. This is an opportunity for us to, I would say, get a baseline and really understand where are we and then what do we need to do to improve safety of our schools and our school districts.
Thank you. And I would invite, if the department has any comments on this that they wanted to share, you're more than welcome to come down. All right. Thank you. Mr. Strom, do you know if there is any particular report? I'm not aware of one. Okay. It sounds like not, so I think you're correct in that, Representative Jessup. Other questions? All right. And is there anyone else anyone from the public who wishes to testify, again, on either bill, 3676, 3885? All right. Not seeing any, I am going to renew my motion that House File 3676 be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Your bill is on its way to public safety. And now I would move that House File 3885 be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Motion is approved. Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate it very much. Your bills are on their way to public safety.
G.
So we will now move to Representative Dabney's bill, House File 3378, Children's School-Linked Mental Health Grant Funding.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. This is an information-only hearing, as I understand.
Yes, Representative Dabney.
There's no motion.
The bill actually is in the possession of HHS committee, but a very important topic, and we've already had probably a day and a half of hearings, and as you know, the chair is a big advocate of this as well and is glad to join you in these efforts, so glad that you're here to talk about it today.
Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you for the opportunity for the hearing, because I think you're right, it does need to be before this committee, the conversation, as well as before HHS, and I appreciate your past support. You've been a key in increasing funding for school-linked mental health in past years, and I appreciate that. Madam Chair and members, I met last week with 20 or 25 superintendents from Southwest Minnesota, a variety of districts from medium-sized to awfully small. And as we had to, we talked about school safety. And then we, of course, made an important shift from talking about school safety to student safety, which is different. And as often happens when you talk to school superintendents these days, they talk about the growing need for mental health services for their students. For a variety of reasons and a variety of challenges that those students and their families bring to school every day and struggle with, they recognize the need for more services and more integrated services with providers outside of the schools so that they are able to have a coordinated approach with those students. The whole idea behind SchoolLink Mental Health, from my perspective, a couple of important elements, and then I'll hand it over to Ms. Abderholden. One, it reduces barriers to young people receiving the services that they need. They don't have to leave school. They don't have to miss the educational opportunities. Mom or dad doesn't have to take off of work. They don't have to arrange transportation. The services are provided where the kid gets dropped off every day already. That's key. Second, the providers are able to bill third party. So if the child has health insurance, the health insurance is on the hook for the health insurance activities that are going on. But important to me, the grants allow the provider to consult with the educators in the building. So that if little Jimmy is having some challenges and is seeing a provider, the provider is able to meet with my educators, with my teachers and the administrators, to make sure that if there's a treatment plan that's effective, that treatment plan is understood, that way of dealing with Jimmy is understood in the first hour class and my second hour class and my third hour class and in the lunchroom in the hallway, so that I get the greatest benefit from the time that I have with the therapist. I want to thank Representative Backer for joining me. I understand that we have not companion bills, but the photocopier, I think, was busy. And I appreciate his joining me.
Thank you. And, yes, Representative Backer, recognize you. You have a similar bill, House File 960, and Representative Dabney is House File, I'm sorry, I need the glasses again, 3378, but similar in terms of providing additional funding for school-linked mental health grants. So thanks for being here, and please, it's informational only because the bills are in the possession of Health and Human Services Committee, but we welcome you to make any comments you'd like to.
Yeah, I thank you, Chair and members. Apologize for being late. Had another with a policy and a finance. So, House File 960 is a school-linked mental health grant that really allows schools to get to the root of the problem. As we are well aware of, if we see a child that's in second or third grade and they're having some challenges, that is where we really want to invest our money at. Because when they get to be older, those behaviors are harder to change. I'm not saying they're impossible, but this is what this grant would allow funding to go to schools. Currently, 76 school districts have a school-linked program. with 130 districts still lacking this program, and so this grant would allow us to invest additional resources and try to catch the tail of the problem from the get-go in those elementary and middle school ages.
Right, thank you, Representative Backer. Representative Debney, any other comments, or should we turn it over to your testifiers?
Why don't we turn it over to the testifiers?
All right. Welcome, Ms. Eberholden.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Sue Eberholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. And I really want to thank you, Representative Bloom, for your strong support on this issue. And as you can see, it's a bipartisan issue, and it always has been. And I think partly because we see how successful it is. We hear stories after story after story where, you know, families, teachers, principals, superintendents all say, we're able to intervene early. We're able to address the issues and make sure that that child does well in school, at home, and in the community. And as Representative Gavney said, we get rid of all the barriers. I think an important part of it, too, is that the therapists, the clinicians, and I think, you know, one important thing is we need everyone. We need the school social workers, counselors, nurses, and psychologists. But we also need the clinicians who can diagnose and treat these children who need it. And that's a piece, and that therapist gets to see the child in their milieu, which is actually better in terms of really assessing what's going on and being able to help that child. Many families appreciate that there's a firewall between the education records and the healthcare records because it's at the school itself delivering the clinical services, and that's really very much appreciated. And I will say that we have a lot of data, so we kind of know treatment completion rates, we know using CASI scores how the children are getting better. So there's a lot of evaluation that goes into this program as well. And as you know, it's incredibly well-liked. I do have a handout that just kind of makes sure that kind of explains the program. That kind of goes into some of the detail. But I think what I really want to let people know is we're not there yet. I know when I testified a couple weeks ago, it's kind of like, this is something that works. If we really want to do something about children's mental health, let's expand this and really make sure that every child who needs it is able to access it. Before I turn it over to the two moms who came today, I just want to mention that one of the things we're running into is even where we have a school-linked mental health program, the demand now is so high that they can't meet it. So we have schools that don't have any, and we have schools that need more. And so I just wanted to kind of put that out to you as well. So thank you again for the opportunity today.
Thank you, Ms. Eberholden. And just a question for you or to either of the authors. I know when we heard, we had a hearing on this topic here maybe a week or two ago, and there are districts who don't have any of these services or not been able to participate in the grant, and we know that the demand is much higher than we've been able to accommodate. But a particular concern to me is those districts who may be either from their geographic location, there is no provider, providers within, you know, even an hour's drive of the school district in that. And I'm wondering if there's anything that we're not doing that we could be doing to try to help bridge the gap with some of those schools. I know I had mentioned, you know, maybe telemedicine or something like that, so we can try to increase access where maybe geographic isolation or location is a barrier. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, Madam Chair. Two thoughts. One is that, yes, using telemedicine, which is not great for little kids, high school kids, not, you know, they can certainly handle that. But one of the other things is that in rural Minnesota, the National Student Loan Forgiveness Program, it's a federal program, they certify the entire agency. But for mental health, unlike for regular health care, they say that you have to work within the walls of that clinic at least 30 to 32 hours a week. So those rural providers can't really get someone to then do school linked. But I'm very happy to say that a bill was introduced last week on the U.S. Senate, bipartisan Republican and Democrat. U.S. Senator Smith did it from here, and it's the Alaska senator whose name I'm completely blanking on right now, introduced that. And so that would actually eliminate that barrier, which I think would actually really help our rural providers so that they can pull people in who want to have their student loans forgiven, but they can actually do the work in the schools that they can't do now.
Well, that's really encouraging, and so I will be encouraging our federal legislators to take action on that, because I think, again, it's one thing we can kind of continue to increase resources to help schools, but some of those situations we cannot produce the providers or make sure that there's providers available or address some of those problems.
And if I may make a comment, you know, one of the things, thank you, Chair, and members, if you look on the bottom, if you look at the counties that don't have sites, three of those counties are in the district that I represent. You got Douglas, Travers, and Stevens. And so one of the things with that, I would assume that where I'm located, we can get providers when we work with North Dakota and South Dakota schools. So, you know, mental health should not have a barrier, a border barrier. And I know Representative Marquardt would be in a similar situation with the district he represents. So if, you know, that would be, I would assume, would also help with that. So
thank you. Thank you for that. All right, yes, I would love to hear from the parents that are here. So if they want to come forward. And then obviously, members, you'll be able to ask questions of any of the testifiers. So. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here. And whoever wants to go first, and just whenever you're ready to talk, just make sure you introduce yourself.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. My name is Blair Hartley, and I'm here to briefly tell you about my daughter, Mara, an 18-year-old senior at Southwest High School in Minneapolis. I wanted to tell you about our family's experience with a mental health crisis and stress the importance of a school's role in our journey. Mara has given me permission to tell her story. She would have been here today, but she actually had to be in class. So, halfway through her freshman year, when she was 15, and with no warning, Mara underwent a profound change. Until that point, she was like many of your children, I am sure, playing sports, going to dances, attending school with gusto, and getting good grades. But all of that came to a screeching halt when she developed depression. It happened literally overnight, and we did not know how to find services within the school to help our daughter, who was not attending class, not doing any work, and isolated at home with deepening depression on a daily basis. Well-meaning teachers and administrators did not have either the time or the training to assist, and yet we still had an obligation by law and by all, you know, by everything we wanted to do to keep her in a learning environment somehow, and it was a really scary time. We are considered a family with resources. My husband and I have health insurance, we have education, and yet we were quite unprepared for this. When your child stops going to school and stops learning, there is no clear path. School avoidance becomes the norm, and it's often labeled truancy, and many kids just drop out of school. And then what do? My daughter missed nearly a year of school before finding a balance that worked and reintegrating into a school she adores. Many students never make it back for lack of intervention. And we all know students who are suffering with anxiety and depression and a myriad of other mental health issues who have no safety net at all. Our family needed consult, assistance with online learning, intervention, oversight, help navigating the complex system of 504s and IEPs, special education, accommodation. We felt unmoored by all that. We wanted our daughter to retain her health and her ability to get an education, and our school had a crucial role to play in that. And we were fortunate to find a school-based mental health therapist who worked with our daughter. She eventually received an IEP, allowing her to re-enter the school community and to be on track to graduate. And having that mental health practitioner in the school where she can go and see a therapist during the school and that we still access our third-party benefits allowed it to work for us and for her. And she's one of the lucky ones. I can tell you today my daughter is a survivor. She plans to attend college in the fall and has been accepted at the U, among other institutions, which we're really proud of. But she truly almost dropped out of school due to the daunting task of navigating her illness, recovery, and school. And my family saw firsthand how mental health services in the school were so very important, and we know how very, very scarce that they are. We also know that within her school, at Southwest High School, there's a long list of people waiting for services if they could only get them, but there just is not enough capacity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hartley. I appreciate you sharing your story and your daughter's story. Welcome.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Rachel Jocks from Plymouth, Minnesota. Today I will be speaking to my son Carter's experience. He's a junior at Wayzata High in Plymouth. I'm a mother of three. Two of my boys have mental health diagnoses. I am also the Director of Development and Programming at the Minnesota Association for Children's Mental Health. This year, my son, my oldest son, has struggled with severe anxiety. At 3 years old, he was diagnosed with an autism spectrum disorder, and throughout the years, he has struggled with attention deficit, anxiety, and some depression. This year has been especially difficult. Historically, my son has excelled at school, earning A's and B's. However, due to the recent intensity of his anxiety symptoms, panic attacks, sleepless nights, poor concentration, he's currently failing two of his classes. At home, we practice coping skills. He has regular appointments with our pediatrician, a developmental pediatrician, and a therapist. Sometimes his anxiety management is a full-time job for him and for our family. On a side note, we also have a son who's currently in treatment for anorexia at Children's Minneapolis. Due to the amount of time that my son was spending out of school for appointments to address his anxiety, he was caught in a vicious cycle of missing class, trying to make up homework, feeling more overwhelmed and anxious as he lagged further and further behind. Throughout this year, I've had several meetings with my son's guidance counselor, school social worker, and teachers to put supports in place. In a recent meeting, I inquired how we could access school-linked mental health support and receive therapy at school to decrease the amount of time that he was spending out of class at appointments. I was told that his case wasn't severe enough. I was told that the provider for school-linked mental health services had a waiting list and was overwhelmed and was only currently seeing the worst of the worst. When I asked about the ratio of mental health practitioners through the school-linked mental health grant, I was told that one psychologist serves a student body of over 4,000 children. With this, I wondered about the children whose parents are unable to drive them to appointments, or when outside waiting lists for therapists are at best a month long, and for child psychiatrists well over a year. What happens when we have a child who reaches out for the first time and they're told what you're feeling isn't severe enough to be treated? Or there's no one to help you at this point. On their website, the Minnesota Department of Human Services states that the objective of embedding mental health services in schools is to reduce barriers such as transportation, waiting lists, intake processes, and stress on the student and the family. These objectives are certainly not being met at my son's school, and they are not being met for my family. I would ask you today, if funding does not increase, to not only be reactive when children need help and when families ask for help, but to be proactive in supporting children by providing early intervention when risk factors for mental health disorders are evident or early. In the words of my son, kids are falling through the cracks, Mom. I see kids who really need help, but they're not getting it. I know this statement is true because in the last few years, four children at my son's high school have completed suicide. Today I ask you to not let one more child struggle, and let's support them in finding the help that they deserve. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Your last name, is it Jocks?
It is.
Jocks.
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Jocks and Ms. Hartley, both for your testimony. Representative Dabney or Becker, are there other testifiers?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. So we'll move to questions, and then I'll see if anyone else from the public wants to testify. Representative Sanstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is actually for Representative Becker. And my question to you is just a point of clarification. In your bill, are you targeting your services just towards specific grade levels or age groups? I wasn't sure if I heard you correctly.
Chair and members. It is a grant program for schools. So, yes, we do focus more so on the elementary and middle. But as you're aware of, as a grant program, we do use that discretion for the schools, and so they can utilize that. It's not a mandate because they know the problem students in their schools.
Thank you.
That need help. I shouldn't use the word problem, but I think you know what I mean.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank the parents for being here today. I know as a parent, when you see your children going through something and you don't even know where to turn, where to seek the help. My question is, Representative Dabney, you mentioned that for those that have health insurance, that the health insurance a claim would be filed for paying for this, and schooling mental health is very broad, but that would mean involving the parents in the process. Is that ever an impediment to getting children the services and the help that they need of having to involve parents? You know, not all parents are probably as receptive to the issues.
I'm phoning a friend here.
Okay. Ms. Everholden.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. Families are involved. We have found that over time, because the therapist is in the school, which is a place that most families know, that there might be some reluctance on some, but generally speaking, families really welcome the opportunity to get help for their children.
Good. Thank you.
Other questions? All right, not seeing any. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to testify on either Representative Dabney or Representative Backer's bills? And again, this is an informational hearing, but would welcome any other testimony. All right, not seeing any. Oh, I'm sorry. Please come on down.
Okay.
All right, and if you would just state your name.
Yep, I'm Stephanie Bender. I'm a school counselor at Central Middle School in Prairie. And thank you for allowing everyone to speak. I want to say thank you to the representatives and parents for speaking to this topic. I've been a middle school counselor for 20 years, and for half of those I've been in a school that has had mental health-based counseling available and therapy for our students. And I just want to reemphasize what has probably already been said, but there is a need more than we have resources for. Our school-based person can see about 10 to 12 students a year, and we usually have a full waiting list of about 10 other students that unfortunately don't usually get services provided through the school district's partnership with Washburn Child Guidance. And it really is difficult when you are the school person and you know families are trying everything they can and really want obviously what's best for their kid and want to find services and resources. And even within the community, there's long wait lists as well. So I think being able to help all districts around the state have this as an option is just an incredibly powerful thing. I've seen it in action for, like I said, over 10 years, and I really wanted to put in my two cents about what I see every day. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bender. I think that was valuable. All right. Representative Dabney and Representative Backer, any final comments from either of you?
If I may, Madam Chair, I think there's two things that need to be said here. One is that this is a question of skill set. As the last testifier pointed out, the school counselors play an important role in schools. So do the school social workers. Different skill sets are able to bring different things to the students. The school nurses and others all bring a different skill set to surround the child. And as Ms. Hartley testified, they're all needed, and it's still a challenge. The therapists, the clinicians, bring that targeted skill set. And so they complement all of the other professionals caring for the student in the building and the families. And then it needs to be reiterated, a reminder that young people with mental health challenges are more likely to be targets of violence, not the instigators of. And I fear a couple of things as we have this societal conversation about school safety. One is we look at school safety and not student safety, because we need to step outside the schools and make sure that kids are safe, whether they're going to the movie theater or the shopping mall or their house of worship. And also we need to not try to go on a hunt for the kids with the mental health challenges and blame them for the school safety issues we're all concerned about. School-linked mental health is a key, however, way to provide kids the opportunities they need for the support they need so they can grow up whole and achieve academically. Thank you again for the hearing today, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Abney. Representative Becker.
Yes, Chair and members, in regards with, as we are well aware of, if we can help the students at where the problem can start, we as a society will receive significant benefits, and that's really what this bill does. We have seen this program successful. This is not something new. It's prudent, in my opinion, that we invest further into this program and offer these grants, and then we create more of a win-win situation for everybody involved. Thank you for hearing this and keeping this up as a discussion, because this is a very important issue in light of some of our recent news stories that we've seen the last couple of months. So thank you.
All right. Thank you both. And thank you to our testifiers very much for your sharing your stories. Look forward to working with both of you on advocating for more resources for this important program. So, All right. Representative Haley and Representative Wills, do you want to go up? All right, so again, we have Representative Haley and Wills. They have somewhat similar bills on the state schools levy, a little bit of difference, and we'll talk about those. But we wanted to have them both up and have their testifiers available. So I will go ahead and move that House File 3797 be referred to the Committee on Taxes with the intention today to lay the bill over for possible inclusion or further action on a later date. And that is your bill, Representative Haley, and you do have an author's amendment.
Yes.
So I think maybe to get the bill in the shape you would like it, we'll go ahead and take action on that amendment first. Representative Haley, did you want to explain the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. The A2 amendment just adds intermediate school districts to my bill, which was an oversight on the first draft, so I would like to include those.
All right. And, any questions on the H3797A2 amendment? All right, not seeing any. All in favor of incorporating the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the A2 amendment now is incorporated into your bill, Representative Haley, so it is in the shape that you would like it. And, okay, so Representative Wills, why don't you go ahead and talk to your bill. Again, a slight difference, but similar in approach. It's House File 3599.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the bills, like you said, are very, very similar, and I think that goes to show how important this issue is. So what we're looking at here is an increase in the Safe Schools levy. And I've intentionally left the line blank in the appropriation because I think it's important for us to have a discussion as to what that number ought to be for the committee. We've heard several different proposals, and the governor has a proposal to double that amount. There are other bills introduced that increase it to $56. So that is why that's blank. And then the language on the back also addresses the intermediate school districts. similar to what Representative Haley is addressing there, to make sure that they are not left out, because the needs at the intermediate school districts tend to be significantly higher than at our regular school districts, and so they need all the help that they can get as well. Part of the reason why I wanted to take on this legislation was because we've heard testimony throughout the committee, not just this year, but over the years, with the needs here. And in this particular funding allows a flexible option for school districts to address the needs that they have that might be unique to their district. So it covers items such as school resource officers. It covers also being able to pay for facility security enhancements. It also covers some of the things that we've been talking about with addressing crime prevention, drug abuse, students and staff safety. Also covers licensed school counselors, licensed school nurses, licensed school social workers, licensed school psychologists, and licensed alcohol and chemical dependency counselors. And granted, with the list of all of the things that this could potentially cover, the more things that are on the list, the thinner the money is when it gets spread out over all those resources. So I feel it's important for us to increase the funding for these priorities and allow the school districts the freedom to decide what on these lists is going to be the best for their school. And I wanted to highlight with the school resource officers, I don't know how many of you had a chance to look at some of the news stories that came out of the unfortunate school shooting that happened a couple days ago in Maryland, but I found it encouraging in such an unfortunate situation that their school resource officer was quick to respond within seconds and was able to stop the school shooter and prevent any further tragedy. So it goes to show that those school resource officers are a valuable asset, and I believe not enough of our schools have them in their school districts. Many schools do not have them at all. So while the language in the bill does not require schools to have school resource officers, my personal request, as people are hearing this testimony and hearing about this funding stream, is that they would be encouraged to pursue that avenue to keep our kids safe.
All right. Thank you, Representative Wells. Representative Haley, for your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. And similar to Representative Wills, thank you also for hearing about this and carrying the legislation. So I won't repeat what she's already covered, but I think the addition that I have in my bill is an equalization factor. You're all familiar with the Safe Schools Levy. The way the law is currently written, it's based on schools per pupil population. So a larger district would gain more money through the levy than a smaller district. I happen to represent a rural area of Goodhue and Wabasha counties. Some of my schools can afford to have a school resource officer or apply these levies to other needs such as mental health counselors, school counselors, etc. Some of my smaller schools cannot do that. So instead of me giving you examples, I have a couple of testifiers that can kind of explain that impact. A few of them are on their way, but Chief Roger Pullman is here to provide some testimony, if you'd allow that, Madam Chair.
Yes,
we can move
yes.
to that step.
I think that would be very helpful.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you both, and welcome. We're very glad to have you here, and if you please just introduce yourself to the record.
Yes, Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Roger Pullman. I am the Chief of Police for the City of Red Wing. I'm also a board member for the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association and a member of the Criminal and Juvenile Justice Information Advisory Group and a member of the National Fight Crimes Investing Kids. I wish to express my support for House Bill 3797. The Red Wing Police Department has a long history of working with the schools and the youth of our community to ensure a safe and secure learning environment. The SRO program is community-oriented policing at its best. SROs are visible in the hallways, cafeteria, classroom, and gym, acting as role models, classroom resources, gang resistance education and training instructors, teaching law enforcement topics, and talking about the value of the legal system, and speaking with students about their career options. This bridges the gap between officers and our youth and increases positive attitudes towards law enforcement. The SRO is not only an officer, but serves as a teacher and mentor. My high school SRO reported that having a present adult role model in their lives of our students seems to be one of the most beneficial impacts that he sees on a daily basis. Many of his students come from broken or disadvantaged homes where these juveniles may not get individual attention. However, his presence in the schools helps build a relationship of trust and understanding. He also makes an effort to reach out to and connect with our minority students on a daily basis. This has improved the relationship between law enforcement and a population of our citizens who have historically felt uncomfortable or treated unfairly by law enforcement. One major impact he has experienced firsthand is the improvement in trust and communications between our local youth and the police department in encounters outside of school. In our Goodhue County Education District, my SRO reports that spending time with students during breakfast and lunch gives them a great opportunity to speak with him and get to know each other on a different level. Kids love to know that there is more behind the officer than just a badge and a uniform. He also stated that sometimes you don't notice the impact you are making on the students until they are coming to you for advice, reporting a crime that would normally go unreported, or just general conversations. A lot of students and families we deal with have had negative contacts with law enforcement. When those students start coming to you with issues and just general conversations, you know you are making an impact. The Red Wing model stresses the importance of educating our students and making good choices and positive choices in school and in their daily lives. Thank you for this opportunity to present our view of law enforcement in schools.
Thank you very much, Chief Pullman. We are very, very pleased to have you with us. I'm going to see if any committee members have questions for you before we call up the other testifiers. Representative Debbie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chief, I apologize. I was out of the room for a chunk of your testimony, but I'm wondering, I have some understanding of what it takes to become a police officer in Minnesota. I'm wondering what the additional education, experience, certification, whatever it might be, that's required to become a school resource officer. Because obviously, pulling me over for speeding, which could be a daily experience, is different than being in the schools with kids.
Chief Pullman.
Yes, Madam Chair, committee member, it is most of my school resource officers, or all of them, have four-year degrees in criminal justice. They have also been sent off to the National Association of School Resource Officers training. And also, within the past year, my entire department has gone through critical incident training, so dealing with individuals in crisis and mental health. Along those lines, our school resource officers stress the importance of being a resource and a need to meet the needs of our students and to help them succeed. I don't know if that answers your question entirely, but there is added training along with interactions and dealing in critical situations that they go through.
Representative Daphne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two questions, if I can hold on to both of them in my mind. Is the training by the National School Resource Officers Association required of school resource officers in Minnesota, or is that something that you as chief require of your SROs?
Madam Chair, committee member, yes, that is my requirement of my department. Within their first year of being placed in a position of school resource officer, I send them to the National Association of School Resource Officer training.
One last question, Madam Chair. Thank you. I appreciate that, I think you're doing the right thing. I am concerned that that's not a statewide standard, and that I would hope that training would be important to the functioning of the SROs and the Red Wing schools. How do you handle, who pays for them? Because public safety is not the school district's financial responsibility, it's the city's. But also, how do you handle the evaluation between your evaluation of the officer as the chief and either the principal or the superintendent's evaluation of them functioning in the building?
Chief Bowman.
Yes, Madam Chair, committee member. We work very closely with the schools, the principals at the schools, and they help provide input on the assessments of our school resource officers. Could you restate the rest of the question?
Who's paying for the school resource officers?
Yes. Thank you. Very important question. Right now, there's a shared payment with our Goodhue County Education District, and because of the special needs involved in that school, we kind of assessed how often officers were called to the school and how much of their time was taken up as a percentage of the school. Currently, that is paid by 60% of the officer salary is covered by the education district, and 40% is covered by the city of Red Wing. We did find out, though, that the officers normally spend about 70% of their time at that school district, so having an officer on site is very beneficial for us. The high school is a little bit different. We've been slowly increasing the cost share there to try to get to where the education district is at. However, right now, it's closer to 70% covered by the city and 30% covered by the school district. And I would like to also add that I had breakfast with both of our superintendents of those two school districts, and I was informed that based at the end of this year's contract that they may not be able to afford the school district and or the school resource officer, and then that would fall to the city or for us to find added funding to ensure that they can stay in the school.
Madam Chair, Chief, I appreciate the shared model. Because it strikes me it is a shared responsibility. And then I also hear that school district budgets are tight. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think Representative Wells, maybe you both want to comment. Representative Wells.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Daphne. I think those are excellent questions. And you may recall a couple weeks ago when we had the presentation from the School Safety Center and some of the training that they also provide above and beyond what law enforcement would receive at their local level. And I just think it might be beneficial for the committee for me to mention a few of those to refresh our memory. They develop basic and advanced strategies for school resource officer curriculum. They coordinate active shooter and violent intruder training, emergency response and threat assessment, de-escalation strategies, and bomb threat courses. Let's see, a couple other ones here. They also provide an SRO newsletter through the BCA. So there's a lot of different training that the SROs receive above and beyond what they're getting at the local law enforcement level that is unique and specific to what the school districts need. And I agree that I think there needs to be some improvement in that area, what that training might look like and what would be standardized throughout the whole state versus what is being tailored district to district. And I appreciate your suggestion. I was not aware of the National Association of School Resource Officers, and maybe that is something that we want to require that all of our SROs would attend that prior to being in the schools. So I think that's a discussion for a later point, perhaps another bill, but that's why we're having this conversation today. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I did some research on costs for a school resource officer, and that might help answer one of your other questions. So in rural Minnesota, the range was between $25,000 and $80,000 a year for a school resource officer. And some of my smaller districts, their school levy would amount to around $40,000 to $49,000. So it could be half of the amount, so the significant gap there in being able to have one at every school. An additional fact you might want to consider, again, think of a rural area. A school might be 15 or 20 minutes away from a police station. And so in the case of, take the Maryland example, if you have an active shooter and you don't have a resource officer in the building, that's a long time to wait for support and help.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is not a question, but just a couple things. One, I do want to emphasize what Representative Dabney and frankly what Chief Pullman shared, which is that what I'm hearing is, and we heard this also Representative Wills a couple weeks ago from the experts that were with us then, that there is a comprehensive, if you will, platform of skill development that's necessary here in order to do this work well in our schools. And part of that does involve a strong relationship building between our SRO, our local police officers, and the young people at the schools. And so that requires a different type of orientation, thinking than the what we commonly think of as law enforcement. It might be not totally fair, but I think there's a common sense of law enforcement that doesn't look at so much at relationship building and looks at, you know, handling the immediate issue of maintaining order and peace and neutralizing the situation. So I just simply want to emphasize that as we move forward with, you know, this legislature and embracing, I think, what I'm hearing, a bigger responsibility on our part to play a strong role as a state legislature with our local school districts as they relate with our law enforcement folks. And so I take, you know, great encouragement from your testimony and knowing about that well-rounded approach. It does seem to me that that it's so important that we shouldn't leave that well-rounded approach simply to, you know, the desires of a particular chief to prepare his or her police officers in a certain way. And I commend you in the way that you're doing yours. And so I think it does, you know, beg for us to, particularly as we're, you know, putting forward state resources, to look for some kind of standardized, you know, set of minimal expectations here. The final thing I want to say, I just want to take advantage of this because you're here, because we haven't had the privilege of meeting Chief, but the word from my networks is that your department does a really good job in building positive relationship with immigrant communities in Red Wing, and so I just want to publicly acknowledge that and thank you for doing that.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I was probably going to wait till later, but we're kind of talking kind of financing and school resource officers. And first of all, Representative Rose, Representative Haley, thanks for bringing this forward and appreciate the Chief's testimony to it. Dilworth, Glenn, and Felton, where I teach, we've now hired a school resource officer. And he has been an excellent asset to our students and also a great resource for the teachers in the training on crisis and lockdowns and so forth. And we actually have two sites, so he's in two different buildings during the course of a day and so forth. And so, I mean, as Representative Wills said, I think it's really important, and I think to stress the importance of having school resource officers available to our schools. And as we look at a funding, and I appreciate this bill, I was just kind of just to get a perspective of kind of some numbers and so forth on the Safe School Levy, is that, and Representative Haley mentioned that it's roughly $25,000 to $80,000 probably. So let's say we use $50,000 for a school resource officer. And that might be a little light if you're going to also be funding benefits and so forth. But at Dilworth, Glenn, and Felton, which is about 1,883 pupil units, that'd be about $27 per pupil. And that would be doable. Let's say you get to a district that's 500 kids at $50,000. That's $100 per pupil. And I've got some school districts that are around 200 kids, students, and that'd be about $250 per pupil. So just a couple points. I mean, and so even if we want to make sure they have halftime, let's say, I mean, that's still in a school of 500, that's $50. In a school of 200, that's $125, way beyond kind of what we're looking at right now. And so a couple things that I really like is, number one, it's equalized. I think that is crucial that it's equalized, because the level of your school safety and the ability to get a school resource officer should not be dependent on where you live or the level of your tax base. And the second thing, just as a suggestion, maybe, Madam Chair, as we look at this bill, maybe we guarantee, and it could be levy aid, a minimum amount, regardless of your size, and kind of do away with for some of them that per student, because it's just not going to kind of fit. You can't go high enough, really. But maybe if we think the average is $60,000 full-time, guarantee them at least a half position, $30,000 to a district for this purpose. Just an idea, because I think that would assure that every single district, regardless of their size and kind of wherewithal, could have opportunity to have it. Just some suggestion, but appreciate the discussion, and I just think this is the way we have to go, Madam Chair.
And thank you, Representative Marquardt, and I'll allow the bill authors to comment as well if you'd like, but I think those are very good suggestions. And again, as we look to this, what I'm calling this broad umbrella of school safety, which encompasses so many things, I think, first of all, we want to make sure that our schools are getting adequate resources to do the things that they feel are critical to help ensuring the safety of the children in their school. And again, that's everything from maybe physical structures, but very specifically support services and resources for kids, including SROs, if that's something they want to do. And that's going to really vary from school district to school district, depending on population and a number of students, on so many factors. So, and I think we do want to make sure that those things are in reach for all schools. And I think you're making some great suggestions. So, would either of the authors like to comment? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate your comments. I had those same discussions with some of the staff as I was drafting the bill, and purposely left the appropriation blank so that we could look at the current funding formulas and have what you called a floor or a base for rural schools. So I'm eager to continue to work on the bill as we move through session and attend to that question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wells?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Marquardt. And I agree with Representative Haley, and I think it's a really good idea and something that we can look at as we move through the process and how we can do that and make sure all the schools are getting at least a minimum. And I was thinking as we were having the discussion that we've been highlighting about the SROs and how important they are. And if a school district decided to have SROs, would they have any money left over from the Safe Schools Levy for the other resources that are available to be covered under this, such as the school counselors and school nurses and that sort of thing? Which is why I think ultimately we do want to make sure that that flexibility is available to the school districts to decide what is going to be the best use of the funds for them in their school district. So there's flexibility, but there's also constraints, and so I appreciate your suggestion.
Okay. All right, I'm going to go to Representative Kreisha, and then we have other testifiers on the bill we should probably get to. They have traveled some distance. So, Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to add to the comments of Representative Marquardt as we look at the rural initiatives. And one, this is just completely whiteboarding and some ideas, but if you haven't already, possibly consider working with the local charitable organizations and maybe allowing for a match. And the reason I say that, we had a couple of school districts that, like the Lions Club, would raise money and they'd pay for the resource officer. And by allowing this money to move through that and have the match, the nice thing is, like, if you get to a Swanville, they're not going to be able to hire an additional officer just to be on staff. But by doing this, it allows them to expand their force. So what happens is, if that officer needs to respond to something outside of the school, because the money is in conjunction with charitable funds, it allows the small schools to expand their force and get more bang for the dollars, as well as to be able to be there for the school. So just some ideas to think about, because These Lions, these fish fries, and these raffles, they can raise a considerable amount of money for this to pay for these officers as well as to help the town. So just some ideas to help this work for the smaller schools.
Thank you, Representative Crescia. And with that, I know we have other people here to testify on the bill. So, and thank you, Chief Pullen, if you want to stick close in case we have other questions for you. We very much appreciate you being here, and thanks for the good work you're doing.
Thank you, ma'am.
All right. And so I believe we have Mr. Christensen. Is that right? Intermediate 917. All right. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Christensen. I'm superintendent of the Intermediate School District 917, which serves school districts in Dakota County. I'm testifying in favor of House File 3797 and 3599. The intermediates and the cooperative units serve our member district students with the most significant needs. We request you include the ISDs and the cooperative units in all of your bill considerations, and so we definitely appreciate being considered in this bill also. This bill helps all districts, providing additional funding to support the many things that are listed in the bill, and I'm not going to belabor any more of the points. We do like the idea of having flexibility because there are different needs that arise in all school districts. But definitely, if we're going to enhance and improve security and safety in our school districts, we've got to be willing to invest in that. And that's what this bill is about, is helping us invest in those enhancements. So thank you for giving me the time to testify, and we certainly support the efforts of the authors and the committee in this area. And we appreciate all the support you've given us in the past also.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen. Very much appreciate it. Are the superintendents from the Zumbrota and Goodhue schools here?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just looking myself. There may have been a problem getting up, so I don't see if Mike Redmond's here or Mike Harvey.
All right. Now this time they have gotten either held up in another committee or are on their way yet. So. Any other questions for the bill authors or for Mr. Christensen? Or is there anyone else who wishes to testify from the public on either of these bills? All right. Not seeing any. Any other comments, Representative Wills and Representative Haley?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I appreciate you taking the time to hear both these bills today. And there were some good suggestions brought up today that could make these bills even better. And I look forward to making sure we land at the right dollar amount, should we even be able to have a target for our committee from the surplus, and hopefully get these resources out to our school districts. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wills. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, and I just echo Representative Will's comments, how important these resources are, and just to, again, call out our schools and our teachers and administrators that do wonderful work each and every day in keeping our kids safe and supporting our kids through all of their issues, and we're all very grateful for that. And I'm appreciative of my police chief, Roger Pullman, and the great work that his staff does as well. Thank you, and appreciate the support to move the bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Haley. And, yeah, great job to both of you. And I think it's very encouraging when you have brought forth these ideas. It's similar to what the governor has included in his supplemental budget as well, addressing the Safe Schools Levy and equalizing it and increasing it. So I think, again, that's very encouraging that we're all kind of appear to be in the same, on the same track when it looks at some of these needs. So with that, I would renew my motion and that House File, I'm sorry, I got to get the right bill number, House File 3797 as amended be referred to the Committee on Taxes, but I'm laying it over today. And then Representative Wills moves that House File 3599 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. But it is my intent to lay it over for today. So thank you both. Thank you to Chief Paulette in particular and Mr. Christensen for your testimony. And Representative Tice, if you're ready, I think I know you've got a number of testifiers, and I don't want anyone to not have an opportunity to speak. My bill, if we don't get to it, we can plop in on Thursday. So And I don't think mine will take very long, so. All right, so while Representative Tice is coming up, I'm going to go ahead and move House File 978 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, but it is my intention to lay it over today. And again, this is the Support Our Student Grant Fund to increase support services for our students in our schools. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we want to do the amendment first?
Sure. Let's go ahead and... there is an A1 amendment in your packet, members. It's H0978A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. And I have it. Representative Tice, if you want to talk to your amendment.
I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. The bill was originally drafted last year, so the amendment updates the appropriations for fiscal year 2019. $12.1 million was appropriated for Support Our Students grants in 2016. The total amount in this bill, $26 million, aims to continue that level of funding and accommodate the schools which applied for the funding in 2016 but were unable to receive it.
All right. Thank you very much for that explanation. Any questions on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. The A1 amendment is incorporated into your bill. And Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, we've talked a lot about school safety and mental health this session. These are important conversations we should be having because it is our job to provide safe and supportive environments for our children to learn. The people inside the buildings play a huge role in school safety and creating a safe environment. Support staff are trained and licensed professionals who work collaboratively to help students with their academic, social, emotional, and career development needs every day. House File 978 aims to provide additional critical funding for the Support Our Students grant program, and I'm grateful to the growing list of members from both sides of the aisle who have signed on as co-authors of this bill. The Support Our Students grant program was created in 2016 to provide dedicated funding to help school districts hire licensed support staff, including school counselors, school nurses, school psychologists, social workers, and chemical health counselors. Support Our Students grants last for 6 years. The first 4 years are a 1-to-1 local match, and the final 2 years are a 3-to-1 match. The program is voluntary and mandate-free for our schools. Initial results were overwhelmingly successful. 77 new professionals were hired in districts across the state, and the grants were divided almost exactly evenly between the metro and greater Minnesota. In fact, dozens of other schools applied for the funding but did not receive the grants. So we know there is a large and growing need. Research shows dramatic benefits when students have adequate access to comprehensive support staff, including decreased disciplinary rates and increased attendance and graduation rates. Minnesota has a long history of providing good schools and good education for our future workforce that we can all be proud of. But when it comes to support staff, for years we've unfortunately fallen behind, and we can and must do better for our students. The Support Our Students grant program can help us with that. And with that, I would like to turn it over to some of the testifiers.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Tice. It's a very good introduction to your bill. And I guess in whatever order you would like to come down. Teresa Weber Sexton, right?
Hi. Good afternoon.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity to testify today in strong support of House File 978. My name is Teresa Weber Sexton, and I'm a licensed school counselor within the St. Louis Park Public Schools. My position exists today because of the Support Our Students grant that was supported by many of you in this room and passed through legislation in 2016. Prior to myself and the Support Our Students grant, funds were not available within my district for a licensed school counselor or any programming services for our schools. Not having licensed school counselors in our buildings is not a problem that's unique just to my district. Within schools all across our state, there are simply not enough licensed mental health professionals to support the increasing need of our students. School counselors, school psychologists, school nurses, school social workers, and chemical health counselors are critical to the safety and well-being of all Minnesota students. As licensed mental health professionals, we are uniquely trained to assist students with individual needs, needs ranging from early detection, intervention, and referral for mental health services, to college and career planning, and a variety of other academic supports. All of us play an important role in the lives of the students here in Minnesota, and ideally we would all work together as a collaborative team in each school. Kids today face challenges and stressors that many of us cannot begin to imagine. Licensed school counselors and our student support staff colleagues can serve as critical resources to students and their families and identify issues before they become larger problems. But with overwhelming workloads, it is sometimes impossible to meet the needs of all of our students. We must begin to be proactive. I know that you've heard the numbers before, but it definitely bears repeating. The average school counselor in Minnesota is responsible for 723 students, the fourth worst ratio in our country. In my role in my building as one counselor, I am responsible for the needs of 1,035 students. As Representative Tice has mentioned, the Support Our Students grant funding was overwhelmingly successful. It was a resource when it was first passed that had never been seen before. Schools all across the state applied for this funding, far exceeding available resources. But the truth is that this one-time funding will simply not be enough to solve our problem. During times when districts within our state are experiencing large financial shortfalls, some of them, unfortunately, are electing to cut licensed school counselors and social workers. We cannot continue to let the lack of mental health funding streams to our schools fall on the backs of Minnesota students. The practical reality of this situation is that students across our state are forced to wait days, weeks, and oftentimes months to get the help that they need, whether it be trying to talk to a counselor, a social worker, a psychologist, a school nurse. There simply are not enough of us within Minnesota public schools. I believe that members have received a testimony in their packets, if you'll look, today from a fellow Minnesota school counselor, Joe Morcombe, which puts into perspective just how powerful the relationship between students and licensed school counselors and other mental health professionals can be when counselors and mental health practitioners have more manageable student caseloads. I know that all of us in this room today want to do everything possible to support our young people and provide them with the best opportunities for success in their future. Providing them with adequate access to support and mental health services is a crucial step in the right direction. I thank you in advance for your support of additional investments in our Support Our Students grants this year, and I thank you for your time today.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Weber-Sexton. Appreciate your testimony. Let's see. Whoever wants to come down next, I have Bernie Burnham from Education Minnesota, Jules Nolan, Minnesota School Psychologist, Carol Quinn, Licensed School Social Worker, and Susan Nopalthy, School Nurse. So if we can't fit you all down, you can maybe go in groups of two or three. So. All right, welcome to all of you. Thanks so much for being here. And if you would just state your name before you begin your remarks.
All right. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Bernie Burnham. I am an elementary teacher, and I am currently on full-time release serving as the Duluth Federation of Teachers president. I also chair the Duluth Community Schools Collaborative group that oversees our three community schools in Duluth, Minnesota. Actually, I have stories for you today that come from one of our homeless teachers. We have two homeless teachers in Duluth, and Stacy Ackerhoff, who was down here last week with us, couldn't be here today, so I asked her if we could share a couple of her stories. She just told me last night that her caseload went from 66 to 70 homeless students that she serves. So I'm going to start with a couple of her stories. This is from Stacy. A short narrative probably best illustrates. The teacher sent me an email. She's concerned about how much school a student has missed. I peek. Yep, she's missed a lot of school. I'll eventually call mom and see what's going on. My supervisor sends an email noting a bus change. Same kid, and the bus is going to a shelter. It's the reciprocal relationship our program has with housing organizations that largely helps us know when homelessness pops up. And so, I see kiddo in the lunchroom and invite her to have lunch in my office. I don't have a grand agenda. At this point, the teacher and I haven't talked academic needs. We just want to know about her well-being. All I do is be with her. I tell her I know her bus changed and I'm familiar with where she's living. I make connections, noting staff that she might know as well. I ask if she knows if there's a plan for her family. She doesn't. I ask about her absences. She explains. We talk about where she was born and where she's been and her siblings. Just stuff. I tell her, well, really, I just heard you moved and I just wanted to check in with you. If you want, you can go back to lunch with your class or you can stay with me. She stays. And then as I'm checking email and letting her eat, she says, this has been the best day I've had since I got to the shelter. I said, oh, what has made it the best day? And she looked at me in the eye. This. It's all about relationship. Here's another story. Once while walking along with a little person when this started. Kiddo, I had a usual morning. Me, huh? I had a usual morning. Really? What made it unusual? I can't say. Blank told me not to tell. And just like that, I knew our lesson plans for the day were a-changing. Huh, sounds like it was unusual. Yeah, Blank was mad. Yelly mad or hurdy mad or both? Both. And so the story unfolded a teensy bit. And kiddo didn't tell, but enough is said that by the time we parted, one little heart is a little lighter. And nothing is solved, but we did this. We took that yucky secret, and we threw a little bit of it out in the open. And by doing so, kiddo was able to let it go, if only for a little while. And we planted a seed. School is a safe place where you can say what you need to say and no one is going to be appalled or treat you weird or poo-poo you or your yucko secret that is just taking up too much room in your heart. I cannot tell you how many times these lips have whispered into little ears, school is a safe place. You only have to be 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 here. And when I say those things, I hope that a little room grows to be able to make space for fun surprises like the desk fairy leaving treats, or field trips, or concerts, or getting to school and realizing it's cinnamon roll day, or that the mailbox might serenade you. Do these things make me sad? Sometimes. About 2 times a year, I crawl into bed early and curl up in a ball and cry until I fall asleep. Because stories about homelessness and all of the baggage that comes with that are sad. Very sad. So when Stacy was here with us last week, she got 2 texts that morning. One saying that another parent, the second parent of hers this year, died from opioid abuse. And the second was about a student who had to be removed from the home. And because there's no beds in Duluth, that student had to go to Virginia, Minnesota. So not only were they taken from their home, they couldn't attend their school. They had to leave there. So that makes it hard for everybody. And today we actually had 4 teachers with us. 2 of them left just as the testimony was beginning early on. They're special ed teachers at one of our high schools, and they got word just as we sat down at Education Minnesota this morning that one of their students OD'd last night. So tough day for them, but they were here with us. So these are just a few stories about why support services are critical to our work as educators every day. I know that when we last year worked on our negotiations, we talked about student advocacy and really wrapping services around the whole child. And we know how important our counselors are to our kids, and we don't have enough. We would love to have one in every school. So I can appreciate the idea behind offering grants for support services, and the funding in this proposal is extremely helpful. In Duluth, we looked at this but chose not to apply due to it being a matching grant. I hope in the future this could be a fully funded proposal. So again, thank you for being here and thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you very much, Ms. Burnham. We appreciate you being here.
Hello, I'm Dr. Jules Nolan. I'm a school psychologist, a nationally certified school psychologist, and I am the president-elect of the School Psychology from Minnesota. I'm here in support of the bill to tell you that we, as school psychologists, work in conjunction with school social workers and school counselors to support students in schools. Maybe you're not surprised to know that one in five kids in a classroom has a diagnosable mental health or learning issue. That of that one in five, only about 35% of those kids get any help at all. And the kids that do get that help, 80% of them get it in school, and that's the only place that they get it. We as school psychologists are also experiencing shortages in our profession. You heard earlier about how the ratio in a school, from a parent that spoke earlier, the ratio to psychologists to students was 1 in 4,000. Our National Association recommends 1 in 850 to 1 in 1,000. And so across Minnesota, we are short on school psychologists to help support students in schools. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Nolan. We appreciate you being here. Welcome.
Chairman Loon, Madam Loon, and the rest of the committee. I'm Sue Nuckleby. I am the president of the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota and also nationally certified school nurse. I am also working in District 287. The school I am in is a federal level 4 setting. So most of our kids come with acknowledged behavioral and emotional challenges. School nurses are, though, often the first ones to recognize emerging mental health issues with children. We often have connections with their families, so we know about things that are going on with their families that might be stressful for the students. We also see those kids who come in with the frequent headaches, stomach aches, just not feeling well, very vague psychosomatic symptoms that we can recognize that maybe this kid needs some more support. And in the shooting in Maryland, the unfortunate shooting in Maryland, it was a school nurse along with the resource officer that were given credit for their quick actions for saving a child's life. School nurses are being cut when budgets get cut. Also, the rest of related services. We seem like the expendable positions. I have heard from more school nurses recently that they are being cut and they are being asked to cover more schools. Some schools are 3, 4. I once had a position where I had 10 schools. And in the school buildings, we had health aides. And I can tell you there is a difference when I'm in a school all day, every day, to learn to get to know these kids. School nursing doesn't work very good on ratios because we did do that for a while, but now we're more on case or workloads is how we look at it. We might have a student with a ventilator and a feeding tube who needs a one-on-one school nurse. Or we might have all regular ed kids, which is rare, but who maybe don't need a school nurse quite as often as kids on IEPs and special needs when they have medical, fragile, or health conditions, diabetes, asthma, that we have to cover. But in the last 18 years, I have heard more complaints from school nurses and concerns about how much more that caseload, that workload, they're being asked to cover, and non-licensed support staff that they have to supervise. So as the nursing shortage, which is going to hit us baby boomers need more assistance, hits, I want to make sure that we do have a level of school nursing that is trained and professional to be in our schools, to helping our kids. Because as school nurses, we know that health, mental and physical, students, if they're healthy, they can learn better and be more engaged in their education. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Olby. We appreciate you being here. And I'm going to guess, by process of elimination, that you're Carol Quinn.
That is correct.
All right. Welcome.
Madam Chair and representatives, good afternoon. My name is Carol Quinn, and I'm a licensed independent clinical social worker, a member of Minnesota School Social Workers Association, and I am a Minneapolis Public School social worker. I've worked as a school social worker in North Minneapolis for over 30 years. And we're facing a public health crisis with the violence in our communities. My daughter always says I shouldn't talk in front of a crowd because I get emotional. That's part of being a social worker. So I think since you've heard such good stuff, I'll just keep this brief. But both the National School Social Workers Association and Minnesota School Association support a multi-tiered system of support with school-employed mental health providers like school social workers, nurses, school psychologists, and counselors. School social workers provide expertise in understanding family and community systems, cultural diversity, risk assessment, and intervention strategies. This is the tough part. I have worked with many students, families, and staff whose lives have been shattered by gun violence. I've helped people try to regain their functioning after such tragedies. I know firsthand how it is nearly impossible to survive such a tragedy. Too many people are being traumatized in schools and in the community due to gun violence. I was at Patrick Henry High School a few weeks ago to offer support to students and staff the day after they had been in lockdown for 3 hours. SWAT teams of police officers with dogs and guns drawn. The students saw this. Teachers saw this. They were locked in classroom and offices. They were traumatized. We all desperately want this to stop and pray that it does. I know for certain we need more school social workers, mental health support in schools to provide emotional safety and services to the increasing number of children and adults who have experienced the unimaginable violence and threat of violence in their communities and schools with lasting emotional fallout. And perhaps more importantly, school social workers prevent the unimaginable from happening. Due to our professional skills with troubled youth, our relationships, acting as relationship anchors, and we need to do this for our children and for our communities. Thank you for your consideration and your time today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Quinn. We appreciate it, and clearly your dedication to the children that you serve. We thank you very much. Are there other testifiers or anyone from the public who wishes to testify on House File 978? Please come on down. Welcome, and please just state your name.
My name is Brooke Majid Hart, and I'm a school counselor in the Minneapolis Public Schools. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for this opportunity. I've been a counselor for 22 years. I've been a counselor in rural Wisconsin, in suburban Twin Cities, and in urban Minneapolis. And what I have found in my experiences is that each of those places provide unique challenges for our students and families, but the truth is that kids are kids wherever they are, and many of the challenges that they face are not unique to where they live or where their zip code is. These include socioeconomic stresses, academic stresses, and mental health issues. As a member of both the Minnesota School Counselors Association and the Wisconsin School Counselors Association, I communicate regularly with counselors from all over both states. In the past, I'd say 5 to 8 years or so, there has been a marked increase in the instances of depression, anxiety, and social phobia amongst our students. In the past year or so, we have seen the added anxiety of students and families who are dealing with immigration issues and with the backlash towards immigrants specifically. All of these issues impact our students' ability to learn and to be successful in school. We are seeing more and more students with ADHD, with autism, and with other disorders that affect their learning and their experience of the world within which they live. Licensed school counselors, along with social workers, nurses, and school psychologists, are often the first people in students' lives to recognize the needs of these students and their families, and to either provide the help they need or to refer them to services outside of the school. Our schools are safer and our students are safer when we have qualified mental health professionals in our school buildings to address and assess the mental health needs of our students and to help them to be academically and socially successful. I work in a school at Roosevelt High School where we do have a mental health clinic that serves about 50 students. We had a waiting list before school even started. There has never not been a waiting list this entire year, and I've given up on even trying to refer students to it because I know that they aren't going to get in there. I appreciate Representative Dabney's bill and highly support that bill, and I want it to be recognized that school counselors, school social workers, particularly, as well as other services in the school support services, are usually the first people that a family, that a parent calls when they need help. Even when they're willing to go elsewhere, they very often do not know the steps to take and how to access those services, whether they are in school mental health services or out of school. We are the people. Even when students are receiving mental health services from a clinic in the school, from a mental health professional in the school, they're lucky to see someone once a week for their 30 minutes or their 50 minutes. Between those once a week appointments, we are the people who students reach out to and who families reach out to. We are the ones who are there for them as a constant. So it is so important that we are there for them and that there are enough of us. I have about 350 students on my caseload right now. I feel incredibly fortunate to have that because I have worked with as many as 800 students on my caseload. And I know how ineffective I was as a counselor when I had 800 compared to what I have as 350. And I know that there are many counselors in my own district that have that 800 and will be looking at having even more in the coming year with budget cuts. We must realize that we are the people who not only our families and our students turn to, but who do we think are the ones who respond when a teacher overhears something from a troubled teen or reads the essay of a student calling out for help or builds a relationship over multiple years with students so that they feel comfortable expressing their feelings and asking for help. It is those of us who are those support services in school. Just as teens all over the country are standing up and shouting out for safe schools and are saying enough to the calls for thoughts and prayers, we too are saying enough to the cry for cutting taxes and for making our kids pay the price of those costs or those cuts. We know what the needs are. We know how to meet those needs. This bill will provide more counselors in our schools, more social workers, psychologists, and nurses, so that we can take the steps necessary towards truly safe schools where students can learn and thrive and grow up to be productive members of our society. This bill is not nearly enough, but it is a step in the right direction, and we ask that you support it and urge your colleagues to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Questions from committee members? All right. That was a pretty powerful testimony. Representative Tice, anything else you'd like to share? I want to thank you, for assembling a really great breadth of when we talk about school support services. It encompasses a lot of different professions, all, as Representative Dabney's pointed out, sort of unique skill sets that they bring to helping our students. But and I thought you did a really nice job of sort of laying out the bill and what it proposes to do. Anything else that you'd like to add?
Just a little. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very passionate about this, and I always have been. When I grew up and went to high school in the 70s, my freshman year, my locker was across from our school counselor, and whenever his door would open, it was smoke-filled. We were never sure from what, because it was the 70s. But, I really didn't get much from the counselor. I mean, at that time, it was basically, where do you want to go to school after this? And at that time, there weren't always a lot of folks going on to school. A lot of us just worked and did some different things, and I went back afterwards. I look at what's happening now, and I'm a collector of stuff, and this is just one of my folders of all the information that I've been keeping on some of the things that we can do to help our students. And what I keep coming back to is we don't have enough support for our students. We hear it over and over and over again.
we've heard it, you know, when we talk about ACEs, and then Representative Precia will talk about child protection. And one of the things that I heard him say was that the sooner we can get to our children and help them, the better life they will have, the better they will do. And I just can't say enough for that. But then I also think of my work at McKinley ALC. And, you know, I've been to the school to visit the day after they've come back from a funeral, or a week after there was a murder-suicide, or right after one of the kids who was afraid to walk to school because he was afraid to get shot did. We need these for our students. They're struggling. And then we haven't even touched on the workforce part of it, as far as, you know, what do they want to do? And half of these kids don't have a clue because they're not expected to do anything. What we need is for them to have that support, somebody to say, you can do this. It's not out of the realm. You can do this. And when I look over here, I see these folks, and they're all going, yeah. And it's like, yeah. You know, we value our education, but our students are struggling. Bad. Big bad. And so we really need to take a look at what we're doing. And, yes, it does cost to have counselors, but I'm willing to say I think the return on investment is going to be huge, even bigger than we'll ever dream, because I believe it's that important. So with that, thank you very much for the time here today. Thank you, Madam Chair, for letting this bill be heard. I do believe in this with my whole heart, and just thank you all.
Thank you, Representative Chase. Thank you to your testifiers. And again, we're laying over the bill for today, but I really appreciate you coming forward and having that as part of our hearing today. Representative Devney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And two quick things. One, three, I guess. The number always gets larger. First of all, thank you. This was a powerful day, and I appreciate your scheduling committee time for these sets of bills, as well as the hearings you've held previously this session. My question is to your path forward on these school safety bills. We can see that the passion is bipartisan, that these speak both to our heart and our concern for students, but I think also to our head in creating, as Ms. Megan Hart said, school environments where kids can learn and thrive. I'd be concerned about these issues getting entangled with other issues where there may not be the bipartisan support. So my question is, what's the path forward for this set of issues before the committee?
Thank you, Representative Dabney. And I can tell you what I can tell you at this point, because there are some unknowns out there yet. I think the primary thing, since we are the Finance Committee, would be a target of funds for a supplemental. I am hoping we are going to receive a target. I believe we will, but again, I guess until we do, I don't know or specifically what that would be. So what I'm trying to do is position us to hear a myriad of really good ideas that what members are putting forward, again, under what I'm calling the broad umbrella of school safety. And so we spent, you know, a few days of committee time trying to dig into some of those proposals, and I think some very good ones and absolutely bipartisanly supported, so that when I'm going to be optimistic, when we get a target, we will then have some ideas that we have fleshed out that we would be able to plug into a target. And I would fully expect to be visiting with you more about that, because I do want this to be a bipartisan effort from our committee. I don't think there's much level of disagreement about the importance of the things that we've been discussing. So and does that cover all of your questions? That's kind of what I know at this point.
I'm trying to remember. I think it was the Reagan administration secretary referred to known unknowns and unknown unknowns. And yeah, so no, you've given me the answer. I appreciate. I do have to raise one more thing, however. The school social worker who raised Patrick Henry and the incident last week. I'd remind the committee that if you look at the school shooting incidents, they occur primarily in rural and suburban districts. Not in the urban core. The incident at Henry last week was an example of an adult from the outside with a gun. The incidents, the concerns that Representative Tice raised about the aftermath of a murder-suicide outside of school,
a student concerned about their safety walking to school, about guns outside of school. Yesterday, the Public Safety Committee again blocked the consideration of two bills on universal background checks and gun violence protection orders that are bipartisan in nature in the legislature and have broad public support. We're not going to keep schools safe. We're not going to keep kids safe until we deal with guns. And I would ask that you take your position as chair of this committee and urge your leadership to deal with the gun issue this year. The public is demanding it. We will see that particularly from our youth on Saturday with the March for Our Lives, and it's time that we as the adults get out of the way and move forward on dealing with the gun issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Abney. And I know that there is more involved that legislators will want to be talking about, and we talk about how to keep our kids safe. But again, it's my duty right now to, again, try to be prepared for bringing a package forward that can be widely supported. I'm hoping unanimously supported, but widely supported within the House, and hopefully we'll be working in partnership with the Senate as well on things that we can do within our schools. I know that's not the end of the discussion, and I appreciate your comments, and there are a lot of discussions happening about this broader topic as well. So
thank you.
With that, thank you to everyone. There was one additional bill. It's mine, so we will address that on Thursday. It's actually, in a nutshell, a proposal to have some bonding funds for grants to schools for safety facilities. So, and a special thank you to my assistant, Solomon Wells, who was a big help to me in talking about his mommy's bill, and so we appreciate that. With that, we are adjourned.